Jim, let me start with you. You're a grower, too, right? But obviously giving back in ways, serving on the Soybean Council. Where do you farm?
So we farm in Northwest Cass County up between Page and Air, North Dakota.
Nice.
Yep. I serve the Soybean Council as chairman. And just a little background on the council. We administer the checkoff for the soybeans. We're part of the federal checkoff, so we handle the checkoff here in North Dakota. We focus on market development, outreach and education, and research. And, of course, one of the big things, market development right now, is a big deal for us.
Need more markets, don't you?
Need more markets. We always need more markets. And we also need to preserve the markets we've worked hard to get. So,
tell me a little bit about, again, the checkoff program. So a portion of every bushel?
Correct. 0.5% of the value of that bushel sold.
Half of 1%?
Yep. And half of it goes to the federal United Soybean Board, and the other half stays here in North Dakota.
Got it. And you're advocating for your growers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For
yep.
markets and everything else. Markets are the only thing that are going to solve this right now, right?
Markets and trade. And Justin's the perfect guy to talk trade. Justin's on the Soybean Growers Association, so he can talk trade and policy. But, yeah, we need these trading partners. We need them to step up, and we need to get these agreements done.
And, Justin, I always equate markets and trade as one and the same because the trade deals are designed to open up new markets, right? And am I right?
Well, largely, yeah. And, you know, trade has been very beneficial for American agriculture for the last 30, 40 years. I think, you know, we've had some tough times, too, not saying we haven't had some bad years here and there, but by and large, the last few decades have been pretty good for American agriculture. We've had great trade relations. You know, look at all the shuttle facilities we've built up in rural North Dakota to send soybeans out to the Pacific Northwest, send them to Southeast Asia, China especially. So I credit that Chinese demand along with some of our other foreign buyers, but also ethanol, you know, the biofuels industry. Those are things that have created prosperity in rural America that brought young people like myself back to our rural communities. When I was a kid, farmers would do anything they could to tell their kids, don't come home and farm. This isn't for you. There's no future in this. You know, biofuels and our international trade growth to Southeast Asia in particular out of North Dakota, that's what's brought a lot of young people back. And I credit that with, you know, I'm a former mayor of my little town of Daisy, 76 people. You know, I think agriculture is what keeps our little towns alive and going, and we need it. We need trade, and we need a long-term future. We can't use it all here in America.
Quick rabbit trail on Daisy. I hope there's a sign out front that says the home of Gary Tharaldson.
You know, I don't know if he's got a sign, but you know, Gary's been very generous to our community over the years, and been we're very lucky to have him, his hometown, and I think he's proud to come from a small working town, too, so shout out to him.
Knows a little something about value-added agriculture, too, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He's involved in our biofuels industry. So, again, you know, great opportunity. Let's keep growing that industry.
And next door is the soybean crushing plant, right?
Right. Yeah, we have, yeah, actually, too, so where I farm, I live in Daisy, farm by Wimbledon area, I'm straight north of the crush plant and the ethanol plant in Spiritwood, North Dakota, so that's a great opportunity, and out here, like you said, we got an ethanol plant and crush plant right by Castleton, we got some more ethanol around the state, you know, we'll let the corn guys talk corn, but, you know, those crush plants are new in the last 2 years, that's something that, you know, the council worked on for decades, trying to find enough demand to bring a crush plant here. And the association, we worked hard on the policy side to make that happen. And I think you're starting to see that on the biofuels. You know, that's what really, I think, drove these two crush plants in North Dakota is the opportunities presented by using soybean oil or other oil seeds, canola and some of the others in biofuels. And that's a great opportunity long term. But that's going to take years to build out, just like ethanol did. So, you know, we got some trade issues going on right now, as people probably are aware. And we're not going to solve this by just, you know, I keep hearing, oh, let's just build some more crush plants and do biofuels. That'll fix it. Well, that might take years and years. And you still got to get rid of the meal. We cannot use all that meal here in America. So we're going to need trading partners and international markets to get rid of that meal. So
makes sense. Jim, are you sending some soybeans to the crushing plant?
We are, yes. When they opened, we started doing some basis contracts with them and spreading out kind of our deliveries as to when it was beneficial as far as the basis price, and we're able to store a lot of beans. So, it's worked out pretty well. And to piggyback on Justin there, you know, North Dakota, we used to export 80% of our whole soybeans out to the Pacific Northwest. Get two crush plants in the state, now we're able to crush about 50% of what we produce here, which helps, but we still got that 45-50% that can still be exported via the Pacific Northwest, and we're a reliable, really good producer of soybeans and supplier to the Pacific Northwest. We need that market. It took us 30, 40 years, like Justin alluded to get our whole infrastructure set up to be that supplier to the PNW. And we still can be. We just need the opportunity and the trade deals to let us do it.
What's the price of soybeans right now? 10 something?
Futures price is 10 something, and you're looking at a local cash price because of the basis is so awful right now, down in the upper eights, lower nines.
Yeah, what's your cost of production?
Above that.
Yeah. By a buck or so?
In some, depending
several
on,
dollars in some
yeah,
cases.
Depending on the growers, yep.
Yeah. Every farm's different, but, you know, yeah, cost of production, you know, and for a younger producer, that's one thing we hear a lot is, oh, this will sort itself out, just give it a year or two.
I've been saying that for 10 years, though.
Right, right. But, you know, for a lot of younger producers that are just trying to get in this into farming, and, you know, maybe they're trying to buy their first land, or they're buying their parents out of their equipment, or trying to buy the house or something, you know, for their family. Well, you've got a lot more debt when you're younger, you know, and even established farmers too. Every farm is unique. That's the thing. Like, just because one farmer is making it doesn't mean that a guy down the road isn't struggling, and vice versa. You know, it's not to say every farmer can't make money right now, but it's every farm's unique, but we got to have markets. You can't produce a product if you have no market and no customer to buy your product. I don't care what line of business you're in. You're not going to be in business long if you don't have customers to buy what you produce.
No, great point. And just so folks that are, you know, city boys like me, out there, you know, if you had a lemonade stand that the kids went out to, they put out there every summer, and you know, the lemonade and you know, the cups and everything else cost you more than you sold, and you just did that year after year, you're going to be in the hole, and at some point you're going to say, okay, I either got to go to a rich uncle or I'm broke, right? And in the case of you guys, it's multiple zeros beyond a lemonade stand, and no matter what you do, at some point, it becomes not sustainable. I can't continue to do this anymore. And then, you know, bad things happen. In my view, we're flirting with that. Like an 80s-like, you know, debt crisis here. Am I wrong?
I think you're spot on. You know, I think a lot of farmers are just starting to realize the gravity of the situation as we're starting to head into harvest. And now with our largest customer not taking our soybeans, you know, this could lead to something very bad if we don't get these trade issues resolved. And I think most of us understand there are legitimate trade issues we need to resolve with China and some of these other customers, but we need action on them soon. You know, we're running out of time, and I think, you know, the old crop, we already had contracts in place. This marketing year, which started September 1st, China has not committed to a single soybean purchase from the United States, and that's never happened in decades. They've always come in and pre-ordered soybeans. That's a first. So, and Brazil, you know, Brazil is just chomping at the heels, ready. They're ready.
And if, working with China,
they are some, but you know, I don't think Brazil wants one customer in China, and I don't think China wants one supplier in Brazil, but. You know, if the United States isn't going to resolve its trade issues with China, that's what's going to happen. And Brazil is expanding their production. They're ready to take our place if we step back and decide we're not going to sell to China. So it's on us to get these deals done and get back to doing business.
Yeah, let's talk about the Chinese. We're playing a big game of chicken with them right now. But in the first Trump administration, in my view, we blinked first. And we did partially because they said, we're going to buy soybeans. And then they didn't. I mean, even if they said tomorrow, open the floodgates, we'll take all your soybeans, they can't be trusted to actually fulfill the deals, can they?
Well, I think the Chinese want to buy from us. You know, I met with some Chinese delegation at a recent soybean international marketing event. Jim, you know, the council just had a Chinese delegation here a few weeks ago.
Well, those guys might, but we're talking about the leadership, you know,
well,
right?
I think business still speaks, and, you know, they told us at the end of the day, price was one of their main driving factors. So right now, our soybeans are cheaper than Brazilian soybeans if they could buy them. But once you throw those tariffs on, you know, we've got tariffs on China. They put retaliatory tariffs on us.
Yep.
All of a sudden, now we're not competitive again. So, you know, and yeah, again, we have big picture issues we got to sort out with China. I think we all recognize that, but they've been a great customer of ours, and you cannot replace them. All of our other export customers combined, and maybe Jim can allude to this too, but they don't add up to the volume that China buys.
No,
and,
I hear you.
And we're working on new markets, and Jim can touch on that if he'd like, but you cannot replace your biggest customer that bought over half of your product in a matter of a year.
100%.
We're talking years and years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We got work to do on that front, big time. And by the way, I've been pounding away on our elected delegation on this very point, and they're like, we're pounding on the U.S. trade rep, we're pounding on the Trump administration, get deals done. We got to get these deals done. So I think everybody's singing from the same hymnal, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. And locally, Scott, what makes it such a big deal this year is you take into consideration the storms that came through in June, and a lot of, you know, in our trade area, 12 to 14 million bushels of storage was lost. Well, now the market with the way the basis is telling guys, well, you need to store your soybeans. We don't have a market for them. Well, okay, traditionally we harvest beans. We deliver the beans at harvest time. A lot of guys are going to be starting to settle up on some payments at the end of the year, maybe prepaying some expenses for next year. Mm. Beans have always been a great avenue to do that with because it's a lower volume product to get, you know, to get a return on compared to corn. Well, now without anywhere to store corn and or beans, it's really become a tricky situation of what do we do?
Yeah.
And what are we going to do?
And then
so that just compounds the problem, and of course that's taken the basis so wide in some places. It's $1.70 where it used to be 70 cents.
And again, basis is to get it to market.
Correct, yep. So yeah. The futures and the local cash price.
Another input cost,
yeah.
Basically.
And some places aren't even going to take beans.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mess.
And I'm hearing that some places are delisting. Some places won't even take them right now.
We're starting to hear more rumors of that. That's one of the things we're working on this week is really trying to get a true handle on what is happening out in the country at our elevators because, you know, there's what we hear and rumors, and then there's facts. So we like to deal in facts.
Yeah.
And that's what you mentioned our congressional delegation. We've been in very close contact with them, the administration. We're sharing that message. They know where we're at.